We're going to have a reading from the Bible now. Today's reading is from John chapter 8. That's verses 31 to 47. So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed in him, "If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." They answered him, "We are offspring of Abraham and have never been enslaved to anyone. How is it that you say you will become free?" Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not remain in the house forever, the son remains forever. So if the son sets you free, you will be free indeed. I know that you are offspring of Abraham, yet you seek to kill me because my word finds no place in you. I speak of what I have seen with my father, and you do what you have heard from your father." They answered him, "Abraham is our father." Jesus said to them, "If you were Abraham's children, you would be doing what Abraham did. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did. You are doing what your father did." They said to him, "We were not born of sexual immorality. We have one father, even God." Jesus said to them, "If God were your father, you would love me. For I came from God, and I am here. I came not of my own accord, but he sent me. Why do you not understand what I say? It is because you cannot bear to hear my word. You are of your father, the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and has nothing to do with the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. But because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. Which one of you convicts me of sin? If I tell the truth, why do you not believe me? Whoever is of God hears the words of God. The reason why you do not hear them is that you are not of God."
Thank you, Will. Thank you, Derek. Warm welcome to you. Let me add my welcome to Will's. And well done for tearing yourself away from the men's tennis final or a deck chair or whatever it was that you were doing before you came. It's great to have you here. Do keep Bibles open. We've got one of these sheets hopefully you're given as you came in, so that will help you as we go as well. I'm going to begin actually with a quote. You may know, as I say it, where it's from. "They may take our lives." No, I'll stop. Apologies to Scots, but "they may take our lives, but they cannot take our freedom." Now, that may or may not be a quote from William Wallace. It's certainly a quote from the film Braveheart, if you've seen it. It's what, according to the film, William Wallace said as he led the Scots into battle at Stirling Bridge. Let me give you another one. You can see the connection. This quote is actually a step closer to historical accuracy. This is what Winston Churchill really did say as he led this nation into World War II. And he said these words, "We must arise again and take our stand for freedom." And both of these rallying cries, they appeal to, and I guess something that we just take for granted and we assume to be the case, which is that freedom is so precious, so wonderful, that it's even more important than death. It's worth living or dying for. And I guess we're all agreed, aren't we, about the huge significance, the importance of freedom. But the question of what freedom really is and how it is that we get it is much more complicated and a difficult one to answer. So I guess we're all aware, aren't we, of political leaders. Perhaps they have tremendous freedom in some parts of their lives. They can do whatever they like. And yet they're clearly, in another part of life, they're slaves to their own natures. They simply can't control themselves, their own passions. And they're ruled, it seems, by various inner desires, whether for gratification or power or whatever it is. And we see that they're not as free as they look. So we see freedom is crucial, it's very important, but it's also a lot more complex to live out than we might think it is. And it's into this confusion about what freedom really is that Jesus teaches something quite revolutionary and quite shocking. And he says, and if you've got the Bibles open in verse 31 at the beginning of our passage, he says this. Well, let me give you my heading here, which says, submitting to Jesus' teaching leads to true freedom. And it comes from this verse, verse 31. So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed him, if you abide in my word, if you remain in my teaching, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So what Jesus is saying in this verse is that if we subject ourselves to him, if we subject ourselves to his teaching, that's what abiding or remaining in his word means. He says the truth is going to set us free. Now, as soon as we hear that, a bit of us is saying, doesn't that sound ridiculous? Submission sounds like the opposite of freedom, doesn't it? What could Jesus be talking about? And Jesus' first hearers raise an immediate objection. Verse 33, they answered him, we're offspring of Abraham and have never been enslaved to anyone. How is it that you say you will become free? That's an interesting objection these people have, politically speaking at least. There's barely an ancient power that the Jewish people hadn't been enslaved to. So if you know anything of the history, right back from being enslaved to the Egyptians, and then they were oppressed by the Philistines, a slight respite, and then basically the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Medes and Persians, the Greeks, the Romans, they'd all taken a go in turn at ruling over the Israelites. So the conversation is clearly not principally about political freedom. They understand that Jesus must be talking about freedom at a much deeper, a much more fundamental level. And they're saying to Jesus, look, we're already perfectly free. Why on earth would we want to subject ourselves or constrain ourselves to you and to your teaching? I guess that's how many of us here today feel about Christianity, isn't it? We like it at a certain level, but we don't want it to get too serious. We don't want it to become a ball and chain and to constrain and restrict our freedom. But if that is us, Jesus responds to us here by questioning just how free we really are without him. So verse 34, Jesus answered them, truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin. Now, this might be strange teaching. It might be a new idea to many of us, but it's very important we get this straight. You see, in the Bible, sin, this word that Christians are always mentioning, sin is not just doing wrong things, although sin does result in that, but sin is living for someone or something other than our Creator. So because you and I were created as worshippers, if we won't worship our Creator, the reality is we inevitably end up setting our affection and worshipping something else. We always make something or someone the thing we're living for, and we just can't help it. And what Jesus is teaching in verse 34 is that whatever we end up living for instead of God, whatever that thing is, will end up controlling us, even enslaving us. Jesus says. So as I've put there on the sheets, the true freedom is not having no master, which is actually impossible, but having the right master. The film, if you ever watched anything which wasn't the Olympics this week, you may have noticed the film Rocky was on again, and I've actually been watching it in installments. I love the film. And if you know it, there's a famous quote in it. It's the night before Rocky's big fight with Apollo Creed, and there's a classic line where Rocky says, if I can go 15 rounds against Apollo Creed, then I'll know that I'm not a bum. And I'm guessing for each of us, there is something in our lives, and it could be anything. It could be succeeding in a career, it could be a particular relationship or family, it might be a particularly a Christian ambition, something we want to achieve, whatever it is, but there is something. And we're thinking, if I can do that, then I'll know that I'm not a bum. Then I'll know that everything's okay and I'll be okay. And whatever that thing is, Jesus says, and it will be different for different people, if that is what we are living for, it will enslave us, Jesus says. Now, I guess we'll all have come across kind of abusive relationships. Those sort of relationships where people just keep going back to an abusive partner, even though they're being badly mistreated by them. And we think, why? Why are they doing that? But actually, we are no different. So why do we let our careers abuse us? Why do we let whatever that something is just keep on mistreating us again and again? Whatever we live for, it ends up controlling us like a slave master, asking more and more of us, and we're powerless to break free. Now, at school, I acquired this, I don't know exactly how, but I acquired the belief that I had great potential. And this belief, which was very strong in me, came to be absolutely crushing in me. And it caused me at school to be absolutely driven in what I was doing. So I was obsessed by wanting to get the right grades, get the right prizes, get the well done from the right people. And it was exhausting. And it was a little bit like, drinking salt water. It was just never enough, always wanted more. And that's life of living for human achievement, living for human approval. It was a little bit like subjecting myself to a cruel slave master who would never let me rest. And so when I was 15 years old, and when I heard the news, and it wasn't the first time I'd heard it, but about how Jesus had sat the only exam, the only test that really mattered in life, and that he'd done it in my place, on my behalf, and that he'd already achieved everything which needed to be done for me to receive the ultimate well done from the one admissions tutor or the one examiner in the universe whose opinion really counts, God himself. When I heard about that offer from Jesus, that well done could be mine through him, I knew that living for him rather than living for achievement or human approval, that was where true freedom was obviously to be found. And that has produced a huge effect, a huge relief in my life. So true freedom here, it's not having no master, but it is having the right master. And the second misconception I put there, which Jesus clears up for us, is that true freedom is not having no constraints, but having the right constraints, the ones which fit with the way we're made. Back at school again, a friend of mine and I were enraged by this cruel regime which was being perpetrated right under our noses in the biology labs, where locusts in their dozens were being kept captivity, that we set up a covert resistance movement which we called the Locust Liberation Front. And each lesson, when the biology teacher was distracted, we'd get someone to go and do that. We would sneak a locust out of the cage and release it to freedom out of the window. Now, since that time, we've worked out that what we were probably doing was releasing these locusts into almost certain death in a British city at winter time. You see, what we hadn't realised is that for a locust, true freedom is not a total lack of constraints. It's having the right constraints, the right environment that fit with how a locust has been created to flourish. And the classic example of this, which I've heard before, is that one of a goldfish. He feels constrained in the bowl and tries to make a bid for freedom, flaps out onto the table and is kind of gasping for breath. You see, again, true freedom, it's not no constraints. It's having the right ones, the ones which fit with our design. So when Jesus says that everyone who practices sin, in this verse, is a slave to sin, the point about sin is that it's motivated by the desire to break free from our Creator's constraints. So if you know the story back in the Garden of Eden, that the serpent was trying to convince Eve that God is a killjoy, you've just got to break out. And so what we do is we decide, a little bit like that goldfish who feels constrained, that we know better than God, and we make our bold bid for freedom, and we launch ourselves out of the bowl, only to find ourselves kind of flapping on the table and longing for breath. One example of this I thought was the sexual liberation movement in the 1960s. And that was a conscious throwing off of all constraints or traditions about sex. And that does sound like liberation, doesn't it? But a generation on, it was pretty clear that it didn't deliver the wonderful society which it had promised. And society was left with this huge increase in sexually transmitted diseases, in broken relationships and broken families and with fatherless children and on and on. And it's produced a great scar in society. And I think that's just one little picture for us of how this true freedom is not throwing off restrictions entirely, but accepting the right ones, the ones which fit with our Creator's design for us. Now, I need to be clear at this point that enjoying the freedom which Jesus has come to bring us, it takes a lot more than simply deciding to adopt our Creator's constraints. You see, our slavery as humans is much, much deeper than that. And our freedom required a ransom price to be paid before we could be released. And that ransom was the life of the Lord Jesus, dying in our place to purchase the freedom which we desperately need. But once we accept that freedom, Jesus' rescue, and once we submit to him as our new master, Jesus promises in this verse 31 that if we abide in his word, we will know the truth, and the truth will set us free. So Jesus really does free us from that old slavery. Now, I think that the thing that has hit me most as I've been looking at these verses again over the last couple of weeks is noticing who exactly they're addressed to. I wonder if you notice that in verse 31. It says this: "So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed him." So do we see this is not simply an appeal to the outsider to come to Jesus and accept this freedom? This is teaching for all of us, wherever we might be this afternoon on this spectrum of belief and unbelief. And Jesus is saying, if we abide, if we remain in his word, year by year, we are truly his disciples and we will know the truth and the truth will set us free. And I've put here on the sheets, true freedom, Jesus says, needs to be lived out. And this is a crucial thing for us to get clear. This freedom which Jesus is offering is something that, in the first instance, we receive as a gift. But then it's something we need to practice, we need to grow in order to experience it fully. Now, I'm told, and if anyone does know about hens, correct me on this later, but I've been told that if you have a bunch of battery hens and you release them into a free-range coop where they can run around and do whatever it is that little hens do, it actually takes them a long time before they start to enjoy their newfound freedom. They're so used to being cooped up in their little cages that at first, even when they're freed, they just stay where they are. And they actually have to learn step by step from scratch what being a free-range hen is actually all about. And it's very similar for you and for me. It's as we remain in Jesus' word, it's as we continue submitting to his teaching year after year, that we progressively get to experience the breadth of freedom which Jesus offers. So to take the example that I've already given in my own experience about being enslaved to achievement and human approval, I can honestly say from the age of 15, I have been freed from that slavery. It is a huge release, and now, although I do want to work hard, I do want to succeed in life, that is not what I'm living for. And that is a huge liberation. But the point is that this battery hen enslavement mentality has certainly not vanished from my life. So I'm still hugely prone to all the old thought processes that I used to have. And I'm still far too driven by others' opinions of me. And then that reveals itself in all kinds of ways in my life. It's why I'm always concerned to try and project the best image of myself to other people. It's why I get overstressed about things like talk preparation and often overwork. It's why I don't take criticism well. It's why I often keep quiet when I should speak out. And anyone who knows me well will give me half a dozen other ways it expresses itself, which I may not be aware of. So a little bit like that former battery hen, I am now free. At a fundamental level, Jesus has freed me from my slavery to human approval. But you see, I still have a long road to walk in terms of trying to live out that freedom and discovering this wonderful liberation more and more in experience, learning what it is to be a free-range human being. So I hope we've seen through these verses something of the wonder of what it is that Jesus is offering to us here. You see, by nature, each one of us is a slave to sin. And yet, as I put here, submitting to Jesus' teaching, paradoxically, really does lead to true freedom. But sadly, many people convince themselves that they do not need this freedom, this liberation. And in the remaining verses, Jesus demonstrates how, as I put here on the sheets, rejecting Jesus' teaching demonstrates just how enslaved we are. Now, I've hinted already that slavery to sin is a little bit like an addiction, in that it's, you know, a bit like drinking salt water. It hooks you in more and more, greater and greater thirst, smaller and smaller returns, and it gets worse and worse. And another feature of the enslavement of sin, which again is very much like substance addiction, is that it is very often characterized by denial. You know, that kind of refusal, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, to even recognize the problem we're in. And I've put here on the sheets two particular delusions, denials, which prevent the people that Jesus is speaking to here from recognizing their own slavery and accepting his offer of freedom. So let's consider the first one there on the sheets, which I've labeled the morality delusion. So verse 33 again. They answered Jesus, "We are offspring of Abraham and have never been enslaved to anyone. How is it that you say you will become free?" So these people here are arguing that they do not need liberation, Jesus' offer. And the basis of their argument here is that they is because they are physical and they believe spiritual descendants of Abraham. Now, as you may know, if you know the Bible, way back a long time ago, Abraham was told, "Through your offspring," this is the footnote, "through your offspring, all the nations of the world will be blessed." So God had declared all those years ago that Abraham's offspring would be God's solution to all that has gone wrong with this world. And these people here in the passage, they're arguing, that is us. We are not part of what is wrong with this world. We're not slaves. No, we're free people. In fact, since the Exodus, God's people have been called God's son. We're not slaves. We're part of the solution. Jesus, we agree with what you're trying to do. You're just talking to the wrong people. And actually, this argument for refusing Jesus' offer here is very much alive and well today, especially amongst people in churches, people like you and me. So we agree, don't we, that there are people out there who are slaves to sin. And, you know, they definitely need divine help. But thankfully, we're okay. We don't need any intervention. If anything, we're part of the solution, aren't we? Not the problem in this world. But Jesus divides the world rather differently from the way that you and I might tend to do it. You may know that in a first century Roman household in the Roman Empire, there were basically two types of people. There were slaves and there were family. And in verse 34, which we've already touched on, Jesus divides the world into these two groups, slaves or sons, the problem in this world or God's solution. But what we see is that Jesus divides the world in a very surprising way, a shocking way. Verse 34, which we've seen before. Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin." So the enslaved group that need liberation is comprised of, according to Jesus, everyone who has ever sinned. And then on the other side, there's the one person who has never sinned, the true Son of God, Jesus. And therefore, he alone is the true solution to all that is wrong with this world. So verse 35, "The slave does not remain in the house forever." You say there's no future, there's no security in being a slave. "The Son," i.e. Jesus, "remains forever. So if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed." Now, do you see what Jesus is claiming? Jesus is claiming here to be the one human being who has never sinned. In fact, in verse 46, if you look down, he says this outright. He says, "Which one of you convicts me of sin?" Now, that That is, and we're used to it because it's Jesus, but that is an outrageous statement. Can you imagine anyone you know, any right-thinking human being other than Jesus, ever standing before a crowd of people, a crowd which included some of his closest friends, some of his fiercest enemies, and saying to them, can any person here convict me or point out one sin which I've ever done? Can you imagine someone saying that? But this is crucial for us to get straight because it is what sets Jesus apart from all other humans. He alone is the true offspring of Abraham, the true son, the one person who himself is not enslaved, the one person who can therefore pay the ransom. You see, God's plan has only one hero. It has only one savior. And you and I need to give up thinking that by nature we are part of the solution in this world, when actually by nature we are part of the problem. I love U2, and U2, and the singer Bono was asked by Q magazine why he had the word sinner stenciled in to the back of one of his leather jackets, and he replied like this. He said, it's best to be upfront about these things. I am one, isn't everyone? And that's the first and the most crucial step towards true freedom. You and I have to abandon this morality delusion. We have to accept that we're on this side. We are slaves to sin by nature, and that we are in desperate need of Jesus' liberation. And the second reason these people give as to why they don't need the freedom Jesus offers, I've put here on the sheets, I've labelled it as the spirituality delusion. Now, this objection is actually it's connected to the first one, but it expresses itself slightly differently. And in verse 41, Jesus rounds off his argument, explaining why his hearers are not true sons of Abraham. Verse 41, his hearers said to him, we were not born of sexual immorality. We have one father, even God. And what is fascinating here is this claim, despite the fact that Jesus has just exposed to them that they, unlike him, are sinful, they're still claiming that they're children of God. They're claiming to be on side with God. They're spiritual people. Now, if you've had any kind of contact with people with psychiatric delusions, there is a strong temptation when you're talking to them to avoid confrontation, just to play along with their false beliefs. But Jesus, in his love, in his kindness to us, he doesn't let us persist in our delusional state without challenging it. And he clarifies for these people and for us what true spirituality actually looks like. Verse 42, Jesus said to them, if God were your father, you would love me, for I came from God and I am here. If you were truly spiritual, truly religious, if you were sincerely in touch with the one true God, the way that would show is that you would love me, Jesus says. And can you imagine any right-thinking human being other than Jesus ever saying anything remotely like this? But Jesus is saying, don't kid yourself that you don't need my liberation because you think that you're spiritual or you think you're religious. In fact, as I've put in the heading there, rejecting Jesus' teaching demonstrates just how enslaved we really are. So Jesus says, verse 43, why do you not understand what I say? It's because you cannot bear to hear my word. You are of your father, the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. But because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. Jesus is saying, if we refuse to submit to his teaching, it actually exposes within us that we actually prefer lies to the truth. And it therefore shows that far from being spiritual people, far from being children of God, it actually shows that we bear the family likeness of a rather different family, that of Satan himself. Now, I'm aware, as I say, that this is very shocking, disturbing teaching. One day, I guess it may even be illegal in this country for me to be saying what I'm saying to you now, repeating this teaching of Jesus. But Jesus speaks in this stark way because it's true. And because sometimes you and I need a big shock to break us out of our delusional state. I don't know if you know this, the IRA, they used to hijack cars and they used to force the drivers at gunpoint to take their bomb to its destination. But actually, very often it didn't work. Despite the gun at their heads, people just refused to do it. But what if you could enslave someone's mind and get them to do it willingly? And I guess that is exactly what we see happening today with the indoctrination of suicide bombers. Can you see there is an even deeper slavery than being physically forced to do something? And that is the slavery of a self-destructive delusion. It is possible to have our minds enslaved to such an extent that we don't even acknowledge, we don't even admit to the problem that we have. And that is the kind of slavery of these people that Jesus is speaking to, and the kind of slavery of many people today, perhaps in this room. And Jesus, in this passage, is launching an intervention, and he is confronting us, and he's saying to us, your slavery is so deep-rooted that you may not even see that you've got it. But please, I'm the one person in history who has never sinned, the one person who has never even lied. So please trust me on this one and come to me for the freedom that you need. Now, I'm guessing for most of us in this room, we have already come to Jesus. And wonderfully, we're already experiencing something of this freedom that I've been talking about, which Jesus offers. But I guess, like me, you'll know that those old thought patterns, those old battles, don't immediately vanish. And you'll be aware, I guess, even from this week, of various battles with particular sins that you've been engaged in. And if that's you, as it is me, we need to remember that Jesus' way is the way of freedom. So don't listen to the devil telling you that Jesus is a killjoy. Do you believe that Jesus' way is the way of freedom? And if so, at the point of temptation, remind yourself, Jesus made me. Jesus loves me. Jesus knows me better than anyone. He knows what makes me flourish. And he's calling me to obedience in this particular situation, however hard that might be, not because he's a killjoy, but because he longs for me to experience what being a free-range human being is really like. And so let's make sure we are those who trust him and who abide in and remain submitted to his teaching.